Hey, everybody. Welcome in. Thanks for joining us. I'm James Adams. He's Skeeter Robinson. This is the Fantastics, My Fantasy Fix, DFS Golf Podcast. And Skeeter, we are underway. We're on the second stop at Hawaii, the Sony Open. We'll be breaking down that par 70 in here in just a moment. But we got our first glimpse of golf in 2023. It was Kapalua, the Tournament of Champions. And I had a pretty good round overall. I played a couple good lineups, a couple good bets. It could have been better if Morikawa held on. But boy, oh boy, were some of the views of the ocean crashing up against the rock jetty, people surfing. Like, boy, is that nice to see in January.
Yeah, I unfortunately didn't get to watch much. I was pretty busy. I got to watch a little bit on Sunday, but the drone, I saw a couple images of the drones. And
if you amazing. They were capturing,
like, there was one, like, the water spout. I don't know if it's a spout or whatever. Water just kind of erupts coming from the hole. Like, that was just really cool to see. I think, like you, I had Robin Morikawa in my lineup. The problem was I had nobody else to go with him. Cantlay didn't come through. Keegan was not good. Mullinax is okay for his salary. And then Seamus Power, like, he had a lot of birdies. He just couldn't string things together.
It was, again, the two guys you mentioned that were certainly the most helpful. Rahm and Morikawa. I think it was Svensson that really crushed me from having a great lineup. Yeah. Actually, that one, it ended up being my Adam Scott lineup that paid more in the end with his 29th finish. So that was my better of the two where I had the pair. Yeah, I was in on Callum Morikawa and John Rahm. And I'll tell you this, man, it just kind of proves to you that this is one of those tournaments. This shows why. I mean, yeah, I guess. In the end, I was mistaken. I actually profited by $5 in my $5 lineups. But in the end, it just shows you that, I mean, you had one and two. But Rahm in the contest I'm looking at now was 40% owned. Morikawa 20% owned. Only one person, my JT Poston share, was under 10%. So just another reminder when you get these small field events why it's probably wise to not go all in with your DFS budget anyway.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you say Post was under 10, like, yeah, it was hard to find anybody under 10, and even leaving salary and things like that. But and, you know, some of this got hurt with Xander on Wednesday, which drew from Pro-Am, so I probably got some people off of him. Like, Morikawa was just, compared to everybody else, he was not as popular. And, you know, that's why I went him over Finau. And, you know, I had him over Xander even before the Xander injury kind of came out. So that was kind of a deciding point there, and that worked out. I mean, for somebody who had a couple of decent trips there, I was surprised that he was not getting much attention.
Yeah, interesting, and boy, it'll be interesting to see how the public feels about him in the future, given the domination for 3.5 rounds and then a collapse when it came down to the final stretch run. But in the end, for me, I enjoyed the tournament. I had the win bet on Morikawa, so I still get the top five. My mom had the Rahm bet. Like, it was a tossing, turning thing. My last thought was, in a way, Skeeter, I don't know if it's just me making an excuse, but last year I hit the tournament champions winner, and I did not hit another outright winner the rest of the year. So in a back in my mind, I'm almost happy that Morikawa faltered at the end, because at least I don't have that albatross looming over me again. Probably just an excuse a gambler would make.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I don't think I was anywhere near Cam Smith a year ago, but I remember this tournament from a year ago. We were talking about a little bit before the show, so yeah. Speaking of losing outrights and on the back nine in heartbreaking fashion, yeah, that brings back some memories from last year.
Well, at least you get to do it while watching beautiful scenery, and that's what you'll get at Wailea Country Club, too. A lot different than the tournament we saw a week ago when it comes to the par, the distances, the change of elevation. The Sony Open in Honolulu, par 70, 7,044 yards. Skeeter, I'm looking at some of the past winners and guys with great success. Maybe I'm just over compartmentalizing the 70 par 70 type courses, but it seems to be a shorter hitter's course for me. Is that the case? What are we looking for here?
Yeah, definitely. This fits the Colonial, Heritage, Wyndham. Basically, if Webb Simpson has won the tournament, it fits that track. So if you can think of Webb Simpson wins, even though we're not at the Olympic Club for the U.S. Open. Your Simpson, your Kisner type of player. So maybe it's almost like that Georgia area. Zach Johnson, but what's nice to see type of hitter can win, because we saw Hideki win last year, and he can be a little bit more of a hitter. Cam Smith has some power, but You can see, like, David Tom's not a big hitter. Jerry Kelly never was. Jimmy Walker was. KJ Choi, no. Justin Thomas, that's the year he... I think he just dominated Hawaii. I think he shot an opening around 59 in 2017, the year he won that. Kevin Nas won here. Kuchar, so... Kazire, so, yeah, it's those RSM, those, like, Georgia, those tight, narrow courses is what you want. Henley, which we'll bring him up for a minute. Ryan Palmer. Apparently, okay, I see Henley and Palmer, and that makes me think that we've had a couple golfers who've won in the past try to win a second time and lose in just heartbreaking fashion. Because I think a couple years ago, Palmer lost when he went OB on, like, 18. Like, he just, I think he shanked one or hooked one into, like, the houses right nearby in 18. So that's something to think about. But when you're looking at the course, rough isn't real heavy. Like, driving accuracy is not that strong, but that doesn't really affect scoring. Like, we saw four unders a cut here a year ago. So for me, it's the usual scoring stats, tee to green approach, opportunities, birdies. I will look at the proximities from, like, 150 to 200. That one does kind of pop up a little bit. And with a bunch of par fours, I will look at the par fours from 4 to 500. But, yeah, strokes gained par five, despite the fact there's only two of them, I believe, if I remember right, it's 9 and 18. That does pop up as, like, the most significant set of the three strokes gained for par three, par four, par five. So that is what I'm going to look at. One stat I heard or I've seen, in the nine past winners of the Sony have played the Tournament of Champions before coming over here to play. The one time it wasn't was Cam Smith, and it was the year that the President's Cup was in Australia in December. So I don't know if these guys who haven't played, since the RSM or even before, might be a little bit riskier just because of that warm-up factor. That doesn't mean you can't use any. I mean, you're going to have to use some, but most of your winners do come from people who play the TOC.
Yeah, not to mention it's risky in the fact that you don't have a decent feel of what they played like just the week ago, right? That recent form doesn't quite exist, but it'll certainly be interesting. And Skeeter, I don't know if there's anything else you want to do before we get into the field, but there's definitely some players that I am excited about. Hopefully you're gonna help me with that excitement. Maybe you'll just turn it off, and that'll be okay too. Because, well, I don't know. I'm too fired up about golf right now, probably.
Yeah, I guess the other thing I'm gonna mention too is that really the performance of the TOC has not mattered as far as coming over to the Sony. So it's not like you had to be like top 10 of the Tournament of Champions and all of a sudden you carry that over to Sony. That certainly helps. But there's been some players who I think were like towards the bottom of the leaderboard at the Tournament of Champions come over here and win.
But they got those competitive juices going. Exactly. Kind of almost like a preseason, in-season, preseason tournament.
And now that this is an elevated tournament, like $2.7 million went to the winner of the Tournament of Champions. Yeah, they're doing quite fine. Sony not in elevated events, which by the way, maybe we'll have to talk a little bit about this when we get to one and done. These elevated events kind of could change the strategies here a little bit.
100%. We usually wrap up the podcast with that, so stay tuned for that, because I'm with you as well when it comes to that conversation in saving. Live golfers if you can, and all this other thing. But we'll get to that. Skeeter, you're ready to get into the Sony?
Yes.
All right, well, let's do so. And we've got a 10K plus tier that only has four guys in it right now. It's Tom Kim, 10-5, Sungjae Im, 10-3, Hideki Matsuyama, 10-1, Jordan Spieth, 10K even. All four played last week, Skeeter. Is there a favorite for you among this group?
I think it's going to be Tom Kim for me at 10-5. Over past 24 rounds, he's number one tee to green in approach, second opportunities gained, second in proximity. I mentioned one of the comp courses was Wyndham. He won Wyndham, if we remember, to get into the FedEx Cup playoffs and nearly made it all the way to Atlanta, but couldn't quite get there. But he won Shriners, which I don't think there'd be much of a correlation here. Maybe. I don't think there's much. But 11th at the CJ Cup, and he was 5th last week where he lost a stroke putting. Like, for him, if his irons are so good, if he can do anything putting, like, I'm just looking, like, the last two times he's gained strokes putting, he's won. 6.1 at Shriners, 12.5 at Wyndham. So if he can get the putter going, that seems to be a little short sample size. Seems to be some success. But he can even have success even if he doesn't putt well. There's enough value that at 10-5, you can fit him in. Because I think you and I both like a ton of players in the 7s and maybe even high 6s. But I think as we're going to get to, I'm not sure you have to go here at the 10s.
So Tom Kim's going to end up being my third of four in this group, but I also have been thinking about it. I'm like, there's a good chance I'm going to have plenty of money left over where I might just differentiate from my favorite, Sung J.M., to Tom Kim just to get some exposure. We'll see how heavily invested I am in the 10K because of what you just said about how I have a feeling I'm going to have some builds with a lot of salary left over. I'm going Sung J.M. as my favorite. He did play last week. He's got a pretty good course record here. I don't know if the Honda is as good of a course comp as the others, if I'm making too much out of the simple par 70, but if that's a Sung J.M. course as well, the Honda. This just screams to me like he played last week. He plays well here. Great fit for him. And I just wonder if maybe with Hideki being the defending champ, Tom Kim kind of being everybody's darling, and Jordan Spieth being everyone's darling in the golf world, I just wonder if Sung J.M. might not have the lowest ownership on a place where I think he's going to play really well.
So he was second at Wyndham last year, and then you look at some of the other comp courses. He was 15th at Colonial, Charles Schwab, and 21st at Heritage. So, I mean, he has that profile. I don't hate it. 7th at Shriners, which, whatever that means. 2nd at the Tour Championship. I mean, the Tour Championship is a hard one because that's a harder course, but both, you know, Eastlake and Wylie are both very traditional tree-lined courses, like definitely built back in the 20s, 30s, 40s, that type of modern era. So I don't hate Sung Jae. Obviously, if things get a little out of control with if everybody's on Tom Kim, I would have no problem pivoting to Sung Jae.
Would he be your number two? Is there another player here?
Yeah, I will say he's my number two.
I think Jordan's my number two, and again, his ownership gets crazy. I might still, if I have the money, move back up to Tom Kim because, I mean, obviously it's clear who I'm fading at this point. I think Tom Kim fits the mold, but I'd probably have Jordan. I don't know if that's again, his course history here is immaculate or if it's the fact that I just, you know, Jordan's fun to cheer for, let's be honest.
Yes.
He's fun to watch, so he's my number two. Are you fading Jordan or are you fading Hideki?
It's Hideki. Even though that being said, just looking at the early ownership numbers on Fantasy National, we're recording this Monday night, so a lot can change for the early one. Yeah, it's top kid might be the most popular golfer this week.
Okay, and I could see that. Hideki's my fade too, and honestly, I don't think there's anything that really gets me to Hideki at this point. Not to say that he couldn't be the defending champ and win it, but I don't think anything gets me there.
No. But yeah, Kim and M are the clear two in this range from an ownership perspective, and then Hideki and Spieth are they're significantly lower, but we're talking like 10%, whereas Sung Jae is going to push 20, Tom Kim potentially 25. Again, this is just as of Monday nights when we're recording this.
Interesting. Shall we take it to the 9Ks?
Yes.
It's Tom Hoagie at 99, Russell Henley, 98, Brian Harman's 97, Corey Connors, 96, Billy Horschel, 95, Keegan Bradley's 93, Mav McNealy, 91, and Taylor Montgomery at 9K even. Skeeter, do you have a favorite in 9K?
Oh, boy. I played Russell Henley here for a year and could have got me a win last year, except for that. Kind of, he didn't do much on the back nine. I guess I'll probably just go back to Henley. He did play last week. He has a win in a second. He's got some other top tens here. So those are both encouraging as I try to pull up the stats on him. Side note, which is really stupid. I have to have my Fantasy National open on a different browser. Because I signed up before that was acquired by like Fanball with the MFL 10s and that. And when they acquired them, I said, well, is there a way I could merge this? They said no. And there was two different email addresses I had. So I have to, I have to keep them on separate tabs because I, use the MFL 10 for best balls and league safe. Yeah. And I got to get in the playoff contest, which I never win that Dan runs. But, that's not going to stop me. Henley, pretty good tee to green, pretty good approach, par four, short par four, proximity decent. Does struggle with the putter, which is nothing new, but again, the fact he's played well here, maybe he's got these greens figured out. Not the best par five player, but he's going to be popular. Maybe I will eventually just say I can't put myself through more Russell Henley issues at Sony, but at 9,800, he's kind of the guy I'm leaning towards the most here, but I have others right around him that I like.
I'm interested in him. I think I'm going to go with Brian Harman as my favorite, but I have no real strong feeling about this tier. There's probably five guys I might use, none that I'm going to go overweight on, though. I'm going to go with Brian Harman. The course history is really good. Hasn't been as good the last couple of years, but we've seen a little bit of a resurgence in his games, resurgence in his game. And I kind of like me some Brian Harman. This feels like the kind of course where he, not being a great long hitter, and I know long hitters can win, he could thrive. I feel like this is his chance for a win here early in the year.
Yeah, I'm trying to look, see what he does. 71st at Wyndham, missed at Schwab, 35th at Heritage. So he didn't exactly play the comp courses all that great last year. Well, second at RSM. Okay. So, but again, that's okay. He's been in decent form. I mean, 2 seconds in the fall swing, 16th in the Tournament of Champions. Really didn't get much going. So, but again, as we've said, that doesn't necessarily mean anything coming over to Sony. So, no, Harmon's one of the guys I'm certainly looking at.
Is he the next man up for you? If it's not Henley, you going elsewhere?
Corey Connors interests me a little bit. Another guy who kind of doesn't, shorter, tight line course feels like that would be more his game. 21st at Wyndham a year ago, 12th at Heritage. So, kind of fits that mold. Has been gaining nicely on approach.
Really nice course history here, too.
Okay. I forgot to look at him. With Corey Connors, of course, the issue is can he make a putt? And that's always an issue, but very good tee to green, very good approach. Opportunities gainers there, good par 4 player. 9600, I think he fits the third profile here. And I'm going to feel stupid about this. Like, apparently I lost some of my golf knowledge over the past few months. Has he won yet on the PGA Tour?
Corey Connors?
Oh, he did win in Valero, that's right. Oh.
I was thinking he maybe won, but yeah, Valero is where he won, like as a
Monday qualifier.
Yeah, Monday qualifier. Yeah, and then to get
in. That was the most painless $1,500 I ever lost on a weekend showdown. Like, because he was in the final group, but I didn't have him. I'm like, well, unless he gets an 11 on the hole, he's gonna get the all 200 under 70 bonus. So I was like, okay, well, I already know this is coming. It's not like he had to make a 40-footer for birdie just to cost me. So, yeah, how could I forget that one?
I think Corey Connors is my number two as well. Henley could be in that mix. Keegan Bradley could be in that mix for me. You talked about Henley already. Keegan, I mean, it's just like Corey Connors. Can he make a putt? So rather than just saying, hey, Connors is my two or Keegan's my two and going on, I got to ask you about one Taylor Montgomery who had a wonderful end to the season. I mean, it's not exactly, after coming off the Korn Ferry Tour where he was on fire, he gets to the fall swing and he's absolutely on fire again. Besides a 57th at Houston, everything else is inside the top 20 during the fall swing. Is it too far away now to think you can ride that hot hand at 9K? What are we doing with Taylor Montgomery?
Certainly, I think he's in play. I think the issue is when I look at the first four tournaments he played, from Fortinet to CJ Cup, his strokes gained were all putting. Like 11.2 at Fortinet. How do you not win when you gain 11 strokes putting? 5.8 at Sanderson, 5.2 at Shriners, 4.8 at CJ Cup. You have to make putts here. Like that's a thing. The approach, but this feels like a lot of iron, so it might be tough to kind of trust that one with Taylor Montgomery, but he's number one in the field. Birdies are better. Number one in putting. Number one in short par fours. 12th in par five. But it's that proximity range from 150 to 200 he ranks very poorly in. So I get it. I don't think he ends up on my list, but I certainly see the path to it.
If I use him, it's because I play 10 lineups and he's in one. Like I'm more asking than I am suggesting a play for him. Who are you fading here?
I said there's one more guy I'm actually interested in. He ranks out really well. He does have some decent history here, and he played well last week. Tom Hoagie at 9,900. Like, this might be the ultimate sandwich spot, because you got Spieth at 10, the defending champion Hideki at 10-1. You got Henley with a terrific history at 98. Harbin and Connors people are interested in. Like, are you really playing? How many people are really clicking Tom Hoagie over at the same price tier as these guys?
I mean, I want to make him my fade. It might be the other H-O name in this tier. I don't know why I wouldn't just say Billy Horschel. I want to make him my fade, but I know exactly what Tom Hoagie's capable of, and he's had missed cuts in four of his last six times at this course, the other two are a 12th and a 3rd, and that's exactly who Tom Hoagie is. Missed cut, top five. He could give you either.
Yes. Missed at Schwab, missed at Heritage last year for the comp courses. Did not play. He did not play. I'm blanking on the name all of a sudden. Wyndham. Dates are a little bit off, but yeah, you're exactly right. Like, he gained 10 shots on approach last week, finishing third. Lost four around the green, which that's not great. But again, that shows you around the green means absolutely nothing at Kapalua. Like, you just hit a bunch
You're supposed things. To hit those greens.
Yeah, and as I said, he does have a little bit of a, you know, he has a couple top tens here. Like, this might just be, I mean, and look, this is uncomfortable playing Tom Hoagie over guys who are clearly better than him. But the form is at least there. The upside is there. And if I can get him, you know, if I'm playing Tom Kim, I might have to go here just to try to differentiate a little bit. Because how many people are playing the Toms together? Tom Kim and Tom Hoagie.
At least one person I know, you. Did Tom Hoagie win Pebble Beach last year?
Yes, he did.
I mean, that's a short coastal course, just like this one.
Yeah. Oh, thank you for mentioning that. I forgot. I thought about that earlier. Like, Pebble probably has a little bit of correlation here.
I'm like, I'm so flummoxed with Tom Hoagie. I just do not want to pay $9,900 for him. But
exactly.
Dude, I might just have to make a lineup or two with him because I've already talked about maybe have an extra salary. And there's a chance he wins this thing. There's a chance he doesn't make the cut. And I know that's like an obvious statement about every player, but it seems like he's got those outlying, you know, I don't care if he makes the cut and ends up 45th. That's not really winning any money anyway. So maybe I'm talking myself into Tom Hoagie here.
It makes sense based on his form, based on his stats, why he's in this range. But I'm just telling you, like, this is, you know, this is like, what would be the NFL equivalent of this one? This is like clicking on
Donta Foreman as your RB1.
At 5,900, yes, when you could pay 62 for Najee Harris.
Well, I'm glad I could help you with that one. I don't know if that was the perfect answer, but I came up with it. No. Maybe it's like Richie James.
Hey, I can tell you right now, I won some money over on Christmas Eve with a giant stack in Minnesota with a Jefferson comeback, and it's looking a little tempting early first thoughts for next weekend.
Who are we fading here in the 9K?
Yeah, I mean, look, you mentioned him. I told you this is why I drafted him a year ago in our golf league, because that way I didn't have to worry about getting him right or wrong. If he was right and I didn't play him in DFS, at least I'd give him the league as Billy Horschel. He was bad last week at the Tournament of Champions. Not that matters, and talking to somebody who I think has had some success at Wyndham, and maybe Heritage, like, he at least fits that type of golfer profile. But yeah, I never get him right, so I'm just not going to take a chance on him this week.
I'm there with you. That's mine as well. Let's go to the 8Ks.
There's one player I wish I was here, and he has a good history. Like, why isn't Kevin Kisner here?
I don't know that answer. He has an exceptional course history here. And this is, I mean, Kevin Kisner admits himself this is a Kevin Kisner course. Right. Not that he said about this, but just talking about distance in certain courses.
Unless he decided that, you know, that he wants to be in L.A. tonight to watch his Bulldogs in the national championship game. Oh, Tom Hoagie, TCU alum.
Yeah, who's a more famous TCU alum, Andy Dalton or Tom Hoagie?
LaDainian Tomlinson?
Good answer. That's the correct answer. Yeah. Oh, boy. All right. Are we ready to go to 8Ks?
Yes.
Not sure what I'm thinking about this tier as well, but it starts at 8,700 for K.H. Lee. Adam Scott's 86, Cam Davis 85, J.J. Spahn 84, Keith Mitchell 83, Siwoo Kim's 82, 8,100 for Christian Bezuidenhout, and Putnam and Grillo both at 8K even. Skeeter? Who you got here? Who's your favorite?
Man. So, like, I'm going through the list, like, oh, golf season's back. Emiliano Grillo at 8K. Like, oh, great. We're going to have to figure out what to do with him. I mean, you like silly little narratives, right?
Certainly.
So, I mean, we've had an Australian named Cam win before here. Why don't we repeat it, except this time with Cam Davis at 8,500?
Mark Leishman, obviously not in the field, but another Aussie with a really good course history here. And you've mentioned before, like, Australians play good in Hawaii, whether it's knowledge of the wind or coming from a warm environment where they naturally live because it's summertime there to this. But there is something to it.
Yeah, so Cam Davis, I mean, outside of a miscut at Fortinet, has been putting up solid finishes. Like, Doesn't you know, a couple top tens going all the way back to my tournament, the John Deere, Schwab, Art Heritage, which, hey, that fits. Seventh at Schwab, third at Heritage. Oh, man, there's a combination I like. Solid in the fall, nothing that's going to stand out, but he always, to me, seems like he carries a lot of upside. And his history here in the past 3 years, 27th, 31st, and 9th, like it mainly has been off the tee. His approach hasn't been great, but if he's able to find the approach, I mean, we know he can hit a bunch of wedges into these greens based on his distance. For me, I think Cam Davis is kind of the standout here. Ranks really well tee to green approach, opportunities gained, birdies are better, par 5, and you know, there's really, I mean, he's slightly below average in the par 4s from 4 to 500, but everything else he kind of does well, so I didn't take a chance on that 8,500.
I'm going to go with Keith Mitchell. His course history is exceptional. He won Honda, did he not?
Yes.
A couple years back.
Honda's, I mean, granted, you got to avoid water traps like the plague there.
So I'm going with Keith Mitchell. I know he hasn't been great down the stretch, but in the last two events he played, RSM, he was 39th, and Houston, he was 9th. So his last two events in November, it wasn't a great end of the season for Keith Mitchell, but at 8,300, I actually really like him here.
Let's see. Yeah, 7th and 14th. Yeah, okay. Missed cut, but other than that, four straight top 25s here. Been off the tee. He's actually putted well. His putting's been slightly better here, and he's not typically. But Bermuda's the best of his surfaces. Not that he's a great putter. Solid numbers across with tee to green, opportunities gained, the par fours he does well, par five strokes gained. Okay, that was not on him originally, but he got something there.
Well, hopefully, I have something there. We'll have a better answer come Sunday evening. If you're not going with Davis, where else are you going?
Okay, terrible course history. Like, he's only made one cut in the past 5 years that he's played here, and that was a 47th. And maybe this is a little bit of a gut call because I thought about playing him last week, and I didn't. And sure enough, he kind of popped up. But am I going to be suckered at J.J. Spawn at 8,400? Like,
I'm interested.
I mean, he hasn't missed a cut since Wyndham, which is probably not good for me. Missed cut at Heritage, oh boy, that's a bad double for me, but he's been playing solid golf. Doesn't do anything spectacular, but his tee to green game, with the exception of CJ Cup, has been in the positive. Like, he can vary it up a little bit. And I don't know, there's a gut call here, which maybe eventually I just say, forget gut call, I'm going to go numbers based. But doesn't really do anything horribly wrong. Slightly below average par 5 strokes gained. Doesn't do anything, nothing stands out for him. So maybe he just gets squeezed out due to lack of upside, but I have a gut on Spawn, and I don't know why.
I have trouble getting over that course history, but the fact that he looked so good just a week ago, coming in with that form and knowing, you know, having more of a known to him than some other guys, I'm with you. I'm interested in him. I'm going to say Siwoo Kim is my number two in a tier that, again, I mean, I don't know. I'm also interested in Grillo and his course history, but I'll go with Siwoo Kim because, again, maybe if I throw him and Hoagie in the same lineup, they compete, and that's my answer because they both have that complete, you know, absolute zero floor, but high upside winning, could be great at any time. Siwoo Kim has popped here a couple times, so give me Siwoo.
I mean, I think we're at the point this might be a tad expensive, but, you know, I don't think we can play the all-South Korean lineup anymore.
Certainly not with Tom and Sungjae at the top. No, you're going to have a lot of trouble. You better dig real deep.
Yeah, I mean, that's the ultimate stars at Scrubs, but yeah, I mean, it's starting to be like the women's game, the LPGA, where, you know, a lot of good South Koreans there. You probably can't play them all together because they're so good. Now they're starting to take over the men's game.
Yeah, they may well, too. And so this is way off subject, Skeeter, but you mentioned I got to bring it up to you.
I just brought up the all South Korean lineup, so I don't know if I'll consider about getting off topic.
If you're saving a guy for one and done, or even in our league where you're drafting, I've actually heard other people talking about drafting a league for golf, too. Do the South Koreans garner more stability because I'm guessing Liv isn't going after them since they've got the military thing, a commitment, and they may not be able, you know, they couldn't stick around for 5 or 10 straight years on Liv. Is there something to be said for them being a little more stable in, like, long-term contests?
Potentially.
This is what happens when I don't have any work to do for a couple weeks. This is where my brain goes. I don't know. I'm glad you mentioned it because I at least remember to ask you.
That's a good point. I guess I haven't thought far ahead for like our draft this year about how we're going to have to potentially think about, you know, okay, who potentially could bolt for Liv?
And it feels like none of the South Koreans are going to be on that list.
Right. So, yeah, because of the military commitment, even though there's something where a couple of them could get out of it. Like, it's not based on if you, I don't know. I know there's a weird loophole.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of winning an Olympic gold, I think, or Olympic medal.
I wanted to throw that at you because I was thinking about that the other day, and then you mentioned the all South Korean lineup, and I was like, well, maybe that'd be safe in our league, if any rate. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see if any of those guys do end up getting the call, because I'm not so sure anyone has yet, or if they have, I'm not aware of it. But at any rate, we'll get back to the field here in the 8K. So Skeeter, we've got both of our ones and twos here in the 8K. Who you fade? Is it another South Korean?
Not South Korean, but South African. Does they know?
Fair enough. Because K.H. Lee also in this tier at the top.
I don't mind K.H. Lee. I mean, the biggest knock on K.H. Lee is this is not a TPC course, which tends to be his specialty. But no, K.H. Lee actually has some nice... he rates out very well. But no, I will go South African with Bazenhu too. I don't know why he's here. Like, I know he's made a bunch of cuts in a row, but 65th at CJ, I mean, 29th at Zozo, 20th at Shriner, it's not bad. I mean, he's very putter heavy, and that could play here, but I don't know. There's guys I like above and below him, and I'm just not, you know, he rates out very bad statistically, short-term, long-term, so I think for that reason, I mean, that's my fade.
He's a fine fade. I'm with you pretty much. He's my fade too. I highly doubt I'll be using one Adam Scott, who I did bet last week though. But I'll make him my fade. Adam Scott's not getting play for me this week.
Oh, so no Aussie. Can we even pull an all Aussie lineup?
I mean, I don't know. Cam Davis, Adam Scott. Who else we got in this field? Potentially, I'm sure if we dig down at the bottom when we get to these 6Ks, we'll find some.
Oh, we can't even get Minwoo Lee. He's not in the field.
Well, I'm sorry about that.
You know, I'd play Min Ji Ling if she was in the field. I mean, that's a good golfer.
I mean, there's probably a lot of those answers that you would have, but Skeeter, are we ready to go to the 7Ks?
Yes.
Not going to give you the whole list. We've got a lot of interesting names. We talked about it earlier in the podcast. This was a tier I think we're going to find some players we're interested in. So Skeeter, give me your favorite. Who are you looking at over here?
Hold on. Too many tabs to open. Who was my guy? Like, there was somebody I clicked on immediately. It's like, great. I don't remember who that was. All right, you know what? We'll go with the guy who has good course history. Brendan Steele at 7,300.
Yeah.
Second tee to green, 6th in approach. 18th at CJ Cup last year. Same. Again, a little bit of a boom bust kind of, you know, he kind of started throwing some missed cuts in the second half of the season last year, but his history here, I don't think he's ever
won. It's exceptional. I don't think he's won, but he's had some top fives.
Yeah, missed cut last year, which is an approach, which is odd for him. He gained strokes putting here. He doesn't gain strokes putting hardly anywhere, but fourth and a second coming off, like, you know, this is one of those course history narratives, especially when you're a bad putter, but yet you can putt on a course. Like, yeah, he's 132nd putting out of 144 golfers, but yet he's gained strokes putting these past 3 years here. Like, that should tell you something. As long as the irons are there, if the putter is as good as it can be, I think he's a bargain at 7,300.
I don't disagree with you. There's a handful of guys I like. He is most assuredly one of the 1As, if not my favorite plays here. I got a couple that I like.
Well, I got a ton, so.
I got a couple I like, and I'm trying to figure out who my favorite is. Let me give you Gary Woodland. He's got an exceptional course history here. There's a couple of guys like Gary Woodland in this 7K tier with great course history, but their recent form is not very good. I'm picking Gary Woodland. Honestly, it could have been Webb Simpson. It could have been Mackenzie Hughes. Maybe Hughes would have been the smarter play as my favorite, but I like all three of them really well.
I mean, Hughes did play last week, so
mm-hmm.
You can use that narrative. No, Gary Woodland's hard to figure out.
He has been for years.
Yeah, this is true. I mean, ninth at Houston, but prior to that, he had been bad.
Very.
Like, he's worse Siwoo at this point?
I guess so. He's got the major, though.
Right, but I was just saying, like, Siwoo at least does throw in some random 15th place finishes or whatever. Gary Woodland's, like, top 10 or bust.
Hasn't played here since 2019, where he finished 80th. But before that, it was 7th, 6th, 13th, 3rd. If we're going to give the Pebble Creek, Pebble Beach, Pebble Creek's a course nearby my house.
Oh, okay.
Pebble Beach comp, I mean, Gary Woodland has played well there, too.
I think he's played well at Honda, too. Did he win?
Yes, Honda, he competed at Honda. I don't know if he's won it, but he was in contention last year.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know if Honda's the exact comparison here, but no, he's certainly in the mix for me. Another guy that kind of popped up to me a little bit, Hayden Buckley at 7,600. Had a good fall, 5th at Zozo, and he missed at Fortinet, but if I remember right, he was in contention somewhere. Where was he at? Maybe I'm making this up. I must be making this up. I thought he was in contention. Was it U.S. Open? He might have.
Yeah, he was in contention at the U.S. Open. Okay. Was he the first-round leader?
I don't remember that.
I actually think I remember he was getting, like, he wasn't getting any media attention except from, like, the Monday Q Twitter account that's really good. And he promised that guy the first interview after he won the U.S. Open, should he have won it. I'm almost positive he was a first-round leader.
Okay. But he rates out really well, tee to green, the scoring stats, par 4, par 5. Nothing, I mean, putting not best, proximity from 150 to 175 not great, but not awful. Like, he's just another one of these guys in the 76, in the mid-7K range, I think has some upside.
I think there's a ton of upside. So I already mentioned Webb Simpson. Coming off of a terrible year, but we've seen him have some ups and downs in his career. His course history, as well as some wins at other places. I mean, hell, you even mentioned it as we started the show. If it's a Webb Simpson's place, if he plays well at a Webb Simpson course, he probably has a chance here. So Webb's going to be in my lineups. How many will be determined? Brendan Todd. He hasn't played great at all, but this is a Brendan Todd kind of course, too.
Yeah. I don't know if I starred him, but he was one I took a look at.
He hasn't played good in a while.
I did star him, so he's on my list. Davis Thompson rates out decently stat-wise. Good off the tee, good approach. Putter is hit or miss, but he was one. I mean, I could probably just go through all the names of guys I have starred here. Oh, yeah, go Illini, whatever that means. Nick Hardy. Did he pop? No, he missed here last year. Where did he
pop? He's on my list, though, too. I'm with you.
The U.S. Open's Travelers. Okay, I knew he was popping somewhere recently. But missed at RSM, but prior to that, 5 and 8 cuts, including a 5th at Sanderson. I don't know what Sanderson's comparison is here, but always gains on approach. Good off the tee. Like, those things are there. Putter, a little bit of an issue, but, you know, at 7,500, he rates out over the extreme short term. He's 7th over the last 4 and 8 rounds, and top 20 all the way through 24 rounds. And I have a fellow golf coach here who is always big into Nick Hardy, so I'm sure he'll be on him this week as well.
Russell Knox has a decent little course history here, does he not?
Yes.
And he was okay down the stretch as well. I mean, he is just here in the mix where maybe what I'm trying to figure out is if I have a core of certain players and I just sprinkle in differences here, because there are so many 7,000. I mean, I haven't even mentioned Ryan Palmer yet, who has won here, right, and has a good history. I could make a case for Patton Kizzire. I don't love it, but there's a ton of names right here that I think interest me.
Yeah.
Kevin Streelman, too, by the way. I mean, I'm just a Streelman guy, though. I'm a sucker for him.
Kitayama, I mean, I always like him for upside. Last time we saw him was 2nd in the CJ Cup. He finished 2nd at the Scottish Open, 2nd at Mexico, 3rd at Honda. So he can be boom bust, but he's got top 5 potential in him. So he's one. Alex Smalley, I think, finished the year. Yeah, he finished year 11th at Bermuda, 4th at Houston, 5th at RSM. Like, that's a good stretch to look at. I'm just trying to think of who everybody has here. Let me see this guy. He must have finished well. Ben Griffin pops up, 4th at Wyndham, 3rd at Bermuda, 16th at Houston, 20th at RSM. He must have come off the Corn Ferry Tour. But yeah, I've Knox starred. Lipsky's another guy. Feels like he has upside. And Robbie Shelton. But as I said, there are a ton of names I liked in the 7K range.
You didn't mention the last two, Lucas Glover, Ches Reavie, guys who have played well here as well.
And Ches did play last week. Wait a minute. Lucas Glover's no longer on your ban list?
Oh, I didn't say I was thinking about playing him. I just said you didn't mention him. I'm pretty sure Lucas Glover is still on my banned list. But everybody has an opportunity to welcome themselves back in to the open arms of one Mr. Adams if they just do the right thing.
What's that, win?
Yeah, well, win when I need him to. Or lose when I need him to lose, too. That can be the right thing, too.
Okay, that's fair.
Skeeter, who you fade in the 7Ks?
I'm actually going to fade a guy that you kind of brought up before the show that you might like, and that's Chris Kirk.
Okay. Yeah, I failed to mention him. I will play him too.
Nothing really popping up. You have to go back to the Rocket Mortgage last time. You had a top 20. 5th of the PGA, 7th of the Canadian. Like, he gets streaky, so he just doesn't seem like he's on that streak right now, but let me kind of wait and see where he's at.
We didn't mention Matt Kuchar. I was going to fade him, but I don't know that I can, given his course history.
Has he done anything recently that makes me want... Okay, he had a decent fall. I mean, he probably looked like he missed a cut on a number at RSM, but prior to that, 27th, 29th, 12th. It's not bad. Yeah, maybe, but I don't... The upside is what I would question him with there.
That's fair. I'm not so sure I have a real strong fade. Maybe Lucas Glover just fits the bill since he is indeed still on the old ban list. I don't really have a strong fade. I mean, quite frankly, like, this is the tier I like.
Yeah, no, I do too. Like, there's a lot of plays, and as I narrow this down, I gotta figure out how many lineups I'm gonna play this week and kind of figure it out from there.
Skeeter, you ready for 6K?
Yes.
I think there's a couple names that are certainly in play. There's two near the top that interest my, or spark my interest. I'll start with you. Where are you going? Who is the guy to play?
I'm going to look at 6,800 Ben Taylor. Number one par fours in 400 to 450, 10th in putting, 16th tee to green. He finished the fall very nicely, 21st at RSM, 3rd at Houston. Made the cut at Worldwide Technology. Is that Mayakoba, maybe? And 57th Bermuda. Missed a Shriners, but other than that, he made every cut. I mean, he only missed one cut. Has a third in there. Coming off a nice Corn Ferry season with a bunch of top fives. Don't know a ton of bottom, but the approach numbers are there. Good final two tournaments. Sub 7K, I'm willing to take a flyer on somebody like that.
I think I got a couple I like. I mean, this is Ryan Armour's played good here before. This would fit his bill, as has Stuart Sink. Those are two guys that make a lot of sense. And Stuart Sink, I mean, I guess he's just ageless, or maybe he finally isn't ageless. But I think I'm going to go with David Lingmerth as my favorite. This guy seemed to come on last year a little bit, regained some form that he had back in, I don't know, 10 years ago. We saw a 10th at the RSM, an 8th at Mayakoba, 11th at Bermuda, and I know Bermuda's a lesser field, but give me David Lingmerth here at 6,700. I'm a little bit partial to the guy too, but give me Lingmerth at 6,700, Skeeter.
Loses strokes off the tee recently. Approach, and I mean, it sucks that we don't have stats for Mayakoba or Bermuda because that's where he played the best at. So he's not going to pop his stat models. I get the case. Let's see, missed at Wyndham on the number. Don't really have anything else on him. Okay.
He did finish 13th here in 2016. Hasn't played here since 2017.
Okay. I mean, hey, if they get a pulse or you have a reason here in 6K, go for it.
You got any other names? I think besides the other guys I mentioned in Lingmerth, that's all I'm really looking at. I mean, yes, Jim Herman at 6,100 probably finds his way into a lineup.
Yeah. I mean, you got a reputation to uphold here.
Thank you.
Not a great history. Sam Ryder pops in the stats. I'm trying to figure out why. 5th in putting, 30th in a par 4 from 450 to 500, 19th birdies are better, so maybe that's why. He was eighth at Mayakoba. Had a decent little fall. Some made cuts in there, but so he was kind of last guy that I have mentioned, Chesson Hadley. And I don't think he has a great history here, but eighth at Wyndham. Maybe that's just the complete narrative I'm playing. Did miss the final two cuts, but 17th at Bermuda, 37th at Shriners. So he has a little – and loses strokes off the tee, but good on approach. So maybe that was my case for Chesson Hadley. But I'm not sure how much I'm going to get here if I like the 7K so much.
I'm not sure there's any other names for me. I mean, look, I've got my eyes on, like, Cole Hammer, Austin Eckroat, as potential, like, late-round picks in our draft, and maybe guys that emerge like we saw Thagala do last year. Tom Kim, kind of a different story, but I don't know if those are guys. Those are guys I'm, like, watching. They're not really guys I'm playing. Look, I mean, you could pick a few names out here. Did I say Rory Sabatini already? I mean, yeah, you can find some names I play, but I don't know if there's anybody else I could really make a strong case for.
The only other guy at 6,300, Tyson Alexander. He was second at Houston, 62nd at RSM, 44th at Bermuda, 64th at Shriners. Like, he's all over the place. Like, his irons have been terrible, except when he finished second at Houston and gained six strokes, and everything else has kind of been bad. This feels a little bit risky. I mean, he did win on a Corn Ferry last year, which I'm assuming how he got here. But maybe just one of those dart throw upsides, you're playing 100 lineups or something, maybe that's a guy you consider.
Skeeter, do you have a fade in 6K?
Oh, I'm sure I can find one. Fade in 6K. Do you? As
I said. I mean, not really. At this point in the season, there's nobody that's burned me down here this cheap or anything like that, so... I quite frankly do not have a 6K fade.
I don't either.
I mean, if you wanted me to tell you that I would fade Scott Harrington because he's the same price as Jim Herman and there's only one person I can play at that price, that could be your answer, but I don't know that there's a lot of people clamoring for Scott Harrington anyway.
No, or Jim Herman, so.
Well, you never know. Skeeter? Are you ready to take it to the one and done conversation for the real first time this year?
I won a minute, but wait a minute. You mean to tell me you're not playing Silver Sabs?
I threw his name out there as somebody I would play in the mix of other names down there, but not that I would necessarily recommend.
I mean, here you go. Here's your ultimate stars and scrubs: Jim Herman, Silver Sabs, and Harry Higgs.
I know I saw Higgs down there too, but it's like, all right, we know who he is at this point. Like, yes, he would interest me, but.
Yeah, right. I understand.
Well, Skeeter, let's talk about one and done. You mentioned it at the top of the program. I think it's a good time to get into it because it's not only about who are you picking this week with probably everyone in the field available to you. Certainly in the contest we're in, everyone's still available. Are you saving a Tom Kim, a Jordan Spieth, somebody like that because of the person in another field, or – are you trying to get off on the right foot? Like, what's your thought process? Because we've got the whole field available. Nobody's really coming from a deficit at this point.
I think Spieth is one I certainly will save for an elevated field. Tom Kim might be one, but it might be tempting to use him. The problem is I think he's going to be extremely popular.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm almost thinking Tom Hoagie might be like a nice little contrarian pick here because who's really clicking? First of all, who's clicking his name in DraftKings? Second of all, who's going to click his name for week one of one and done?
I mean, this is we play in a large field where being contrarian early might differentiate you later. And when else? So not only that, not only the question of who's really clicking Tom Hoagie in one and done, who's saving Tom Hoagie in one and done?
Right, I mean, what gets mentioned every year is, like, use good players. Like, I don't think you have to go all the way down, like, hey, I like Brendan Steele. I'm not using him.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I think that's getting a little too cute.
I would agree with you.
But Tom Hoagie is somebody you could, I mean, he's been playing well enough that you actually have to start considering him. But, I mean... Tom Kim's interesting. Sungjae is always a potential chance here. Like, I don't know, whoever you use, I'd say use a good player. Like I'm not using Tom Hoagie in a major. I'm not using him in elevated events.
Don't outsmart yourself in week one.
All right. I'm going Hoagie for now.
All right. I'm afraid to click on anybody because you sold me on Hoagie, but I don't want to steal your pick.
Oh, go ahead. I mean, it's week one. Like, but you brought up something interesting, too, and this is true. Like, we also have to start thinking about the live guys for majors. Like, what do you do there?
I think it depends on once we get to the first major of the year at Augusta. Look at yourself, you know, your score and where you stand versus the field. Because on one hand, don't you think Dustin Johnson's going to be 25% used at the Masters? Because you don't really have – it's not like you can use him at RBC Heritage or whatever the one in Connecticut is now or wherever else he plays really well, right? You've only got four chances to use him. So of all those live golfers, like, I think there's going to be a lot of people – that at least in the at the Masters hammered down with the live golfer because they want to save the other golfers for PGA Tour events that the live golfers aren't invited to. And I think there might be some game theory in actually just completely avoiding the live golfers altogether.
I think so, yes. That would be interesting. When do you use Cam Smith?
I mean, if you don't use him, like what do you think the ownership between the two of them, Dustin Johnson and Cam Smith, are going to be at Augusta? A third of the field? Or am I getting a little bit ahead of myself?
Maybe. It might depend on your situation. Like, because, look, people always use Rory there. Rahm will get some attention. Spieth always will get attention at Augusta. I mean, you have some people who are going to try to get really cute. Use, like, Sergio or Patrick Reed. I don't think Lee Westwood's going to be somebody that people are going to use. But it's an interesting angle. Like, I think, you know, when we start getting... the Masters will be really interesting because from there we'll have an idea how many people are kind of going to the live guys.
That's going to be fun to break down after the fact. See what everybody was thinking, and then we'll follow, you know, when we get the next major, it'll be, oh, who then reverse course at the PGA? Who doubled down on that philosophy?
Right. I mean, because it does make sense. Like, there's still elite golfers playing on the live tour. And if we can only use them four times a year, then why not load up on all, save Rory, your JTs, your Rahms, Morikawa, Hovland, use them in the events you can, and hey, for the majors, let's use these elite live guys.
Are you really going to let Brooks Koepka not get used when you're at the LA Country Club and you haven't used him yet? You're really going to let that one go?
I mean, he better show some form because...
Of course, right. I mean, obviously, he hasn't been good for a couple years, but...
Right.
But if he's well-rested, which he should be, you know. I don't know. I think it's really interesting. I don't have an answer. I just think it's going to be fun to watch it all play out.
Yes, I agree. And it might also be where are you at in the standings. Like, I mean, granted, these are the big payouts, so can you really afford to, quote-unquote, waste somebody? But, you know, hey, if you use a lot of big names at Farmers and Phoenix and I don't even know what the heck. Match play, is that even still a thing? Like, I know there's been some changes and stuff. I need to get back into golf. Like, it's just been football for the past 4 months, so. But yeah, it's an interesting game theory, I think.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to watch play out. I don't know. I have some thoughts on it. We'll get into it as we get to that part of the year. I think there's going to be able to make a case for using them and not using them, but we've got a lot to go between now and then. So, Skeeter, any final thoughts on the Sony Open and our second stop in Hawaii in the beginning of the fall, or the beginning of the fall. What is wrong with me? The beginning of the official golf season.
No, again, this is just kind of a little bit of a transition time, as I know you and I, and I'm certainly others, are, you know, trying to transition out of football, but it's the playoffs, and, you know, we're trying to get used to golf again, especially for, you know, for me, the first time I kind of took the fall swing off and trying to get reacclimated, and, you know, I thought at least, the fact I had Morikawa and Rahm last week was a decent sign, but obviously it was the secondary pieces that didn't work so well for me. So just trying to get back in the flow and figure out what my system is this year.
I am hopefully getting back in the flow. Skeeter, hopefully I'm distracted from the beginning of that Bengals playoff game on Sunday night by a lineup here from the Sony Open.
Well, yeah, I mean, that would be nice as you're rooting on your Bengals and trying to sweat Webb Simpson, who's, you know, two shots back with three to play.
Webb Simpson and the Bengals, two very James Adams things.
Is there a parlay coming?
I don't know. I mean, we'll see. Like I said, I'll be tailgating in Cincinnati, where it's now legal to bet. So maybe we'll see. That remains to be seen. I'll let you know if we get to one.
or a Jim Herman Cincinnati play that connection?
If he's still available, like if he still made the cut in contention, yeah, that's a real possibility.
Okay.
Well, Skeeter, that's all I've got for the Sony. Are you ready to put a bow on this thing?
I think so.
Appreciate everybody for listening to us, and certainly good luck in week two of the golf season. The Wailea Country Club in Honolulu are going to be fun to watch. For Skeeter Robinson, I'm James Adams. We appreciate you joining us here on the Fantastics My Fantasy Fix DFS Golf Podcast.